The cold weather is setting in, but the homeless must now also cope with the coronavirus. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. In 2019, some 568,000 people found themselves homeless, at least on one night. But unlike last year, the homeless shelters are now faced with the prospects of dealing with the pandemic. There is not only the precautions for dealing with the disease, but also the economic downturn that could increase demand. On the phone with us this morning is Bea Miller. She's the executive director of Diakonia, who provides assistance to the homeless. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So what is the situation with you guys now, particularly with the pandemic? How have you changed in terms of providing assistance to the homeless?
What makes it difficult, I think, for ourselves and the other emergency housing shelters on the shore is complying with governor's orders. We can only work at half capacity to allow for the social distancing. Basically, we have 50 beds, but we are operating at probably 32 beds. Fortunately for us, we have family units, which is like a family apartment, so we can keep a whole family still together in those units. But to give you an example, like basically we would have 13 beds available for homeless women, but we only have 6 that we can fill due to the social distancing and the COVID situation. And with the men, we have 20 beds, but we can only take in 10.
So what does then that mean for men and women, for that matter? They come to you, they want some shelter, but they can't find it. What do they do?
One of the biggest things that we've been doing is, and fortunately, the shelter directors have been working together to make sure that we're filling all the beds that are available. So we try to look around for all the other avenues that we can to get shelter for them. We have, in the past, we were able to get grants that helped with emergency motel hotel stay. So a lot of that money dried up very quickly in the initial outbreak of COVID because the shelters weren't able to take in anyone because of the shelter in place. But we do have some funds available that we can still assist people. The biggest thing that Diakonia has been addressing and been able to obtain is additional funds for rental assistance to basically prevent the homelessness so that way people can stay in their housing longer.
Now, I also understand that you have to pre-register for you guys these days. What's the situation with that?
No, actually, we're totally okay. We've basically been, anyone who's in need can call our main number, 410-213-0923, and we can take a coordinated assessment and get them the assistance right away. Diakonia, throughout this whole COVID, we have been open and we've been running strong the whole time.
So what is it like then for a homeless person, and do the homeless realize how serious this is?
I think it is more difficult, I think, for the homeless, to be honest. I mean, we have been fortunate. We haven't seen a lot of illness at all in our facility throughout this whole entire time, which we're very thankful. I think Diakonia being proactive and following the recommendations, we have the face mask, we're monitoring temperatures, we're doing cleaning and disinfecting 6 times a day and more before and after entry, basically just doing screening, making sure everybody is well. We do have one of our units, and this is difficult because we have to close off a unit and not use it for housing, but to ensure that there's no spread of COVID at all, if someone presents with any symptoms, we do make sure that they're quarantined, they get a test, and pending the test, and then we just get them treatment as soon as possible.
Are they aware of how serious this is?
I don't think it impacts them as much, to be honest. I think for the homeless, I mean, they're out there in the elements. There's other factors that impinge on their health and their well-being. I know for myself, for Giving Tuesday, when we're outside, I do 24 hours on Giving Tuesday, which recently we just had, and I am outside in the weather at 12:01. And honestly, when you're out in the weather, especially when it's cold like this, all you're thinking about is how am I going to get warm, where am I going to be, where am I going to go? You know, so the thoughts of COVID and the pandemic is a little more difficult for them to think about when there's immediate needs that they have.
Are they, when you house them, of course, obviously they go through the checks and so on and so forth. Does that bring home how serious this really is, and how do they react to that?
I think as far as they do understand that we're trying to look out for their health and safety, and I think for some of the homeless, they realize, oh, this has changed everywhere. It also, you know, is what they need to follow to be able to get help. So it's created a little bit of a barrier, I'll be honest, because Some of the shelters do require a negative COVID test before they're accepted. So that makes it difficult when some of the homeless on the street are like, why do I have to do that? So it is an education piece for us to explain to the people calling in for help of why this is so serious, letting them know what's going on. Because if you think about it, some of the homeless don't have access to the social media and the media coverage. So they receive all that information when they come to us and the other shelters. We try to educate them on what's happening.
In terms of your staffing, of course, how has it impacted that as well? I know I talked to someone else at another shelter who said that the virus had impacted the number of, for instance, volunteers they were able to get, as well as obviously some of the staff. And I noticed, for instance, that in some cases, because many of the volunteers are perhaps maybe over 60, they even fear more the COVID than, say, somebody who's younger. What kind of impact has that had on that part of the equation?
As far as our operation, it's made a major impact. Our food pantry, we basically lost all of our volunteers. They just weren't comfortable, you know, helping, which obviously we needed to make sure that they were safe. They were of that age group that you're talking about and the at-risk population. So therefore, my food pantry coordinator has been working, and the staff at the house basically have just been working nonstop without that volunteer help. So that's been difficult. We were fortunate that some volunteers were still willing to pick up food and at least drop it off at the house. So we're still able to give out food. But as far as the impact of the level of work, the reduction in people has been significant. Our thrift store program operated mainly on volunteers, and we went from, I think there was 100, I think we had 100 volunteers, and we're down to 30. So our store has not been able to, even when we did the soft reopening, we didn't have the volunteers to be able to have the store open as regular before. So we've only been operating 3 days a week in a limited period of time, so that reduced the funding that we can get for our programs. So those two programs, the food pantry and the thrift store, have been significantly impacted.
Well, in terms of community support, I mean, you indicated a moment ago that there's also a funding issue. How has that impacted you in terms of the kind of donations that you get, the kind of help that you get? I mean, has that affected you at all?
Yes. I think we're not the only ones. There's other nonprofits that weren't able to do their fundraising like they usually do in the year. Obviously, all those fundraising events were canceled, and that makes a major impact, even though Diakonia does receive some state and federal funding, which we're very thankful for, with the different grant funding that's available. There's still a matching funds that has to go along with that funding. So that matching fund has to be private donations that are raised and given. So that makes it very difficult. So we were very thankful for Giving Tuesday through Community Foundation of the Eastern Shore and their sponsors for us to be able to, all the nonprofits on the shore, being able to raise some funds to help with those matching funds and fill those gaps of the fundraisers that we weren't able to have this year.
In terms of the human side of this thing, I mean, you are dealing with this on a daily basis. You obviously, in many ways, you are on front line. That is to say that there is a risk that you could contract this. Obviously, there are your volunteers as well. What goes through your mind as you move through the day, and does it occur to you every once in a while that perhaps you're not in a hospital looking at somebody who's dying or terribly sick, but on the other hand, there's that something out there that one can be fearful of, that is the pandemic.
I think, I mean, to be honest with you, it brings tears to my eyes right away, to be honest. I think, especially the executive director, and I know the other leaders, even in the businesses, I mean, I'm not speaking for myself, and just those people on the front line, the hospitals and the first responders, and we, the people, we've still been doing outreach to the homeless on the street. There's been people, and I'm thankful that they can work at home and they're not putting themselves at risk. For myself, I've been going back and forth from my office as normal, because I'm not going to ask my people to do something I'm not willing to do myself. So it has gone through my mind. I'm kind of part of that risk group, so it's a concern, but it's a risk that I know I need to take for my people. So it's just feeling that weight of not just the homeless clients and guests that we serve, but it's also for my staff team of making sure that they're safe and we're doing everything possible for them to be well as also.
I mean, is there a moment, I mean, at any time where you look at somebody who comes in and they're like probably many other people that you've seen and as homeless, And there's a moment of hesitation at all? Is there a moment of thoughtfulness that before you then plunge back into this?
I think it was difficult for the staff when it initially outbreak to see someone come in and then go, am I going to take that home? Am I at a risk of contracting it? Am I going to take it to the people I care about? So myself and the housing director, basically we allowed the staff to take that day or take a moment to breathe and figure out how we wanted to proceed. We made sure we got, we were able to get supplies to ensure that everybody's safe, and talk to the staff about how we can do that. So I think the screening and all following the recommendations that were given has helped with that. But yes, I think it goes through all of our minds. But then you think about the person that's on the street and that they need help. What are they going to do if we're not here and we're not doing this?
Now, what kind of efforts have been made in terms of personal protective equipment? And do you have enough? Do you have enough masks? How is that going?
Yeah, at first it was very difficult for Dick. You know, we didn't have that provided to us. I definitely saw in the news, you know, there was nursing homes in the hospitals. But the homeless shelters are also our congregate settings, so those are difficult. We were so thankful. We did have some community members that actually made some masks and dropped them off. We had a business that also helped us be able to obtain the masks that we needed. So that's still something that we continue to give to the homeless. As they come through or as we see them, we provide that to them to make sure they have what they need as well. So we have been able to get the hand sanitizer, get the cleaners, but that's still something that we're in need of on a daily basis.
In terms of, now, do you wear any gowns at all, and is masks always worn, particularly inside facility like
yours?
Yeah,
at the shelter.
Yeah.
At the shelter, basically, they have to wear the mask all the time. The only time that they can take it off is when they're eating. We have to do separate meal times, like even Thanksgiving, to give an example. You know, you look forward to sitting around a table and having part of a family. We had to do it different this year because of just ensuring everybody's safety, making sure everybody is well. We were fortunate that Ocean Downs was still willing to bring over carry-out meals. They weren't able to come in and prepare it and serve like they had in years before, but they still made sure. I mean, I really appreciate them coming through, and they delivered meals so that way everyone had a hot Thanksgiving meal, and they were able to sit at the table social distanced apart, and we had to do it at different times. But everybody was still able to participate from that. And we're going to be doing the same for Christmas. It's just still ensuring the social distancing, making sure everybody has their mask on. And when they're in their bedrooms, if they are by themselves, then they are able to take that off and get a little bit of a reprieve.
What was Thanksgiving then like? I mean, obviously you only had a few people, and as you indicate, at any given time. You know, normally in Thanksgiving, you know, you have a certain camaraderie that you mentioned. Obviously, it's particularly for families, but also people who just connecting with one another. What was that atmosphere like as opposed to, say, times past?
It was unfortunate that we weren't able. In times past, it was more like a family-type environment. I definitely could tell this time, and I think a lot of people through the country, basically have a quieter Thanksgiving. I mean, I that's probably the best way to describe it, is that there was just more of, I don't want to say hustle and bustle, but I mean, it was just quiet. It was definitely more quiet. And I don't know if it's just that sense, and unfortunately for the guests that we serve, they had the staff there, but not like an outside touch from the community. And they appreciate the staff being there, and they give up their holiday to, you know, to care for all their needs. But it was definitely just more quiet, and I think more subdued, just taking in the reality of what's going on in our world.
So there wasn't much talk, as for instance there might have been in the past. And I mean, and that
correct,
even you're sitting close to one another, that tends to cut you off, as it were, from other people.
Yes. It does. That isolation has increased not just for the people in the nursing home and different situations like that, but it's also increased the isolation for the homeless as well.
In terms of just the fact that, you know, normally we are a very tactile creatures, and that is that we hug, we shake hands, we do all those things. That sense of connection in terms of touch tends to be really, really important, but as I get a sense, is that connection has now disappeared or certainly had an impact, I guess, on how people are relating to one another, how they feel about what's going on.
Yes, and I think, I mean, it has caused my team to be more creative. To be honest with you, I do elbow bumps so that we can still have some kind of touch, no hand, you know, make sure there's some distance, but even just an elbow wave and making sure we're taking time to talk to someone or listen to them, you know, through the mask but at a distance, or be outside and talk to them when, you know, they're having their cigarette, or if they're not, you know, just to have a little bit of time to spend with them to listen and to talk. And just encouraging that communication from them where we couldn't do that tactile. And so I think it's just being creative, letting people know that they still matter and they're still cared about.
Now, how temporary do you think all of this is in terms of how you've set everything up? I mean, I guess, what is it? I read that there's like 2 guests per room and there's a shower curtain and so on. I mean, you're kind of like improvising here.
Yes. I think, and that's been from the beginning. I think all the shelters, I mean, I don't think any of us knew what was going on or what to do. So the best thing, and honestly, I'm meeting with my team on a regular basis. How do we want to do this? How should we do this? What should we do? Like the cold weather shelter, to be honest, in Ocean City, now they can only serve so many. So we are working with them so that we're a backup when they have that extra person. Where are they going to go to make sure they don't freeze to death? So those are things that we're constantly talking to our other partners, the other shelter directors. We're talking to each other, brainstorming about what they're doing, what we're doing, how we can do it better. And it's just constantly trying to be creative to still meet the need.
Because one of the things I read is that that there's a possibility that because everybody's cutting back in terms of the people that they can accommodate, that some shelters will then, you know, get people, say, from other counties and from other areas because the shelters aren't there, say, in another county, so they come to your county or our county here in Wicomico County. Have you found that to be the case?
Somewhat. We definitely see, I mean, Diakonia serves the Tri-County area, right, which is Worcester, Wicomico, and Somerset. So we definitely have been sharing those referrals among each other. I see a little bit on the outside area, but obviously we're having to encourage people that if they're from outside of the area, they need to access their resources in their area the best they can.
Now, the other thing that struck me is that not only do you obviously have the coronavirus in terms of its impact of spreading it and all the precautions that you have to take, but also the virus has certainly shut down much of the economy. Have you seen an increase in demand, or has the area seen an increase in demand in terms of people, say, being out of work, not being able to find a job because of the virus?
Yes. We definitely, Diakonia, we're finding that there's people who have called in for help, and it's the first time ever that they had to reach out for help because of the unemployment, for them not being able to work. Accessing our food pantry was the first time they've had to come for groceries because they didn't need to do that before. So we are seeing those new people that are being affected by COVID and are needing help, but we're very thankful that we can be there for the community, especially even through food pantry. If there's other ways that we can help keep them in housing, prevent them from being homeless, like giving out food, giving out clothing, giving that type of assistance, then we're trying to make all of that available.
What is that like for somebody who have gone all their lives having a job of some kind, and then suddenly they're having to call you to either get some food or find a place to stay? I mean, that must be fairly traumatic.
Yes. It's being faced with a crisis is very difficult, and it's hard to ask. So we try to make that process when they call the staff, you know, take them through a coordinated assessment, just explaining the reason why we have to ask the questions and find out what they need and what's going on, so that way we can get them the help that they need. So I'm very thankful that our team is definitely prepared and committed on making sure people who call in are getting the help that they need.
Do they see this as a temporary thing for them? I mean, as opposed to, I know, in past, for instance, in 2008 and 2009, we saw people who lost their jobs, and it didn't look as if anything was going to come back for a long time. Now we're talking about perhaps we might be able to get through the summer in terms of the vaccine, that perhaps there might be an economic upturn, say, later in next year. Do they see this as temporary, or is it just too jarring to look that far ahead?
I think a lot of people are thinking it's going to be temporary. they're just looking for that help for now. So I'm glad that they're doing that. I mean, and that's what Diaconia, we try to provide, you know, our mission statement is help for today and hope for tomorrow. So as we're talking to them, we're hoping that we can work with them, you know, financially with their budgeting, with other resources so that they still have that hope regardless of not being sure what's going to happen.
Now, what about also families and particularly the children? How is that impacted? I mean, you guys take in them, or what's the situation with that?
Yeah, we do take in families with children. We do have single parent and non-traditional families that come into the shelter. So they basically stay together as a family unit, which we're thankful. I mean, our shelter is able to accommodate that. A lot of different shelters, depending on how they're set up, they, you know, and it's something they can't help. They have to split up the family with one parent with the children or put the, you know, but we're able with our building that we have available, we can keep the families together in a unit. So it's difficult for the children. I've seen this for all children, just looking at people with masks all the time and not knowing, you know, if they're friendly faces. So again, just being creative, the staff being creative of having the children not be fearful, and their parents are doing real, we support the parents so that way they can give that security and they can give that reassurance to their children while they're in the shelter.
Do you get a sense that the children understand what's going on around them?
No. I don't know if the children do know the impact of what's going on. They just know that they have to stay safe, that, and I just think they see a separateness from people. That they can't go close to people, and that's difficult for them to understand. So that's probably one of the biggest challenges, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that they're aware of the seriousness of this illness, or do they even have a concept of that, of what we obviously take for granted in terms of understanding what's going on around us?
As far as non-school age, no,
yeah,
I don't think they have an understanding of it at all. Yeah. I think they just see this as something's going on and this is what I have to do, and I notice people are walking around and being careful and not talking to each other. I shouldn't say not talking to each other, but not able to, you know, be together, be close, like you said. So I think that's difficult for them. So as much, I don't want to use the word normal, but as much as we can give them that regular schedule, or, you know, we try to provide that.
And what about the school-age children that have obviously far more cognizance of what's going on around them? How are they adapting? Are they fearful? Or are they accepting? Are they, I mean, because kids can be certainly resilient, but we're going through a fairly serious time here.
I think the separateness, especially for homeless children, when they're in a shelter, if they can go to school, then they feel like there's something normal and people don't know and that type of thing. Well, now, since most of the schools are actually, the schools are all virtual now, that does make it difficult. So they're faced with their living situation a little more regularly, so it's difficult for them. But I think they understand that this is serious, you know, from what they're hearing from the school, and that they can't go to school regular. So they're more aware, I feel like the school age people are, but at the shelter it does make it difficult for them. We're fortunate that we work with the Worcester County Public Schools, and we do work with them and with their schooling to make sure that they have internet connection and that they can maintain their schooling even though they're at the shelter.
Now, you indicated earlier that you do outreach. I know in Wicomico County, I think I saw a figure, something like there's about 1,100 homeless living in camps and finding local shelter. What about the folks who are obviously cannot come into your place? How are they faring it, and what kind of outreach do you have to try to keep them obviously going in terms of food and that sort of thing, but also just in terms of safety for this virus? I mean, do you hand out masks, or what kind of activities are you doing on the outside there?
And it is limited. Obviously, I'm trying to keep my people safe, too, and that's what makes it, like I said, that's the dual edge. We do have an outreach case manager, but to keep that case manager safe, I basically have that person go out, and they see the encampments, or they see where possibly the homeless are. If we get a phone call that someone's been seen that's out on the street, and what we do is we try to do drops. So basically there might be a backpack or a bag of food that they can use, and supplies with a mask in it, with some hand sanitizer, some soap, some wipes if we have them. So basically we try to do drops at the locations where we think, or where we've seen, and it has been reported, where the homeless are. So we're very thankful for Worcester County Sheriff, for the local law enforcement, OCPD, and the HOT team through the Worcester Health Department, basically just trying to still keep mindful and talking about the different homeless that are on the street and what we need to do safely to be able to still meet the need there.
Is there much interaction then between your folks who go out, or is it sort of at a distance in terms of you figure out or you hear about what they might need, or even how do you know what they need, I guess, without interacting with them? How does that process work?
And basically, like even before COVID, basically what we did is, like you said, is if somebody calls and lets us know that there's a homeless out in the street or they see someone, we make sure that we have that drop made, but it's actually a business card that we leave so that they can contact our outreach case manager or when they're ready to contact that person. So at least they have a contact. They know where we are. We know the address. We leave the information in there. So we do try to do some visit at a distance if we can. But if they're trying to avoid people too because of the pandemic, then we make sure we just leave supplies for them with a business card and how they can reach us.
And by the way, do you guys also go out to the camps themselves, or is it you really go to out to individuals, or what? And what? How much interaction do you have with a group that's out there?
Not probably too much with the encampments. I mean, we haven't seen that too much in the Worcester County area as far as the encampments have gotten less, I think, because of COVID. So you find more of maybe like a couple and a single person here and there. I know Wicomico County faces more of that, and they're developing a HOT team, a homeless outreach team themselves, to be able to accommodate and figure out how to outreach with that.
So there are a lot of them that are because they obviously are aware that they aren't necessarily gathering in as close a groups as perhaps they at once, at least last year, that they did. I mean, you think that's
correct?
True then?
Yes, I do think it's true.
So are you, as you face the rest of this winter, how optimistic are you that we'll be able to accommodate these folks and get through this? Because, I mean, as I said at the opening, you've not got only the cold, which we experience every year, and it's going to get colder as we move into January, but you also have the virus. How able do you think we are to get through this and be able to accommodate these folks?
I think the most difficult thing for all of us that are out there trying to serve the homeless is the reality of we may lose more because of COVID being out there, because of the situation, because of the lack of being able to accommodate them. I'm hoping that we can... I'm not sure, but sometimes the homeless do migrate basically down to warmer temperatures. We may see some of that. They'll basically kind of go the direction of what's best for them. But I'm afraid we're going to have some loss. That's what I'm concerned about. That's not going to be necessarily from COVID, but it's going to be because of the weather and the lack of shelter. I know even for places of worship, for other outreach that would do the cold weather, it's been difficult for them to consider opening up their facilities to be able to accommodate that because of the COVID concern, because of the volunteers and people that they have. So one of the things we've been trying to let people know is we do need landlords. We do need people that are willing to consider housing so that way we can move the homeless into more permanent, that do have an income, that are looking for housing. Because the more people we can move out of shelter into more permanent housing, then the more beds we have available for the homeless that need it.
Because I was talking to somebody earlier in the week that talked about the fact that they were bracing for the idea that there could be more evictions because a lot of assistance is running out. I mean, are you bracing for some of that too then?
Yes, and that's why we actually were able to obtain grants to be able to help people with that rental assistance so that when the evictions may come, that we'll be able to assist them so they don't lose their housing.
So any final thoughts about for people who are gathering, who obviously have homes, or are going to be meeting with their families and so on, homeless probably is far a bit from their own consciousness. What would you tell them?
I know that it's hard. I mean, I guess it's just thankfulness. I know for myself, I'm thankful I have a warm home to live in. And it's just, I would encourage as families, as they're spending that quiet time, you know, hunkered down and sheltering in place and being safe, that we're still out here and we're still serving the people and we need your help.
We've been talking with Bea Miller. She's the executive director of Diaconia, that provides assistance to the homeless. And we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us this morning.
Thank you so much for asking and allowing us to share.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.